What does the apple mean in Genesis? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capel, California, with Absolute Philosopher. What does the apple mean in Genesis? Well, we've been taught that the apple represents the knowledge of good and evil. The apple represents information. The apple represents a desirable fruit. An apple represents a universal fruit that everyone is aware of and everyone has eaten from time to time. And the fruits of most trees are called the apple. Oh, we call peach, plum, pear, other things, but it's the apple. It's the substance, the food of the tree. It's the nut of the tree, you might say. What does the apple mean in Genesis? Well, in Genesis, Adam and Eve were told not to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and the apple represented the substance of that tree. For if they eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they will have duality in their life. They will have experiences in their life. They will have experiences in their life, yes, they will, that are pro and con. They will not be one-pointed in one direction. And the infinite creative cause was in part trying to demonstrate to Adam and Eve that they should not divide their life up between good and evil. They should not have the infinite awareness of the negative and the positive. For to have two masters, to have two directions in life, leads you nowhere, and you love one and hate the other. And this is never a beneficial thing to do. The Bible is the story of the religious development of a people. And you say, well, the Bible was a divinely written book. Well, all books are divinely written because all books are written by God, and everybody and every being and every writer in the entire universe is God. So therefore, it's all there. Everything is divinely written. Now, we can read pornography, and that's certainly a direction that might take us in an interesting direction. And people would say, well, it's good. It's published, people buy it, and people read it, people have it in their homes, people have it everywhere. Yes. And sometimes people have a broken toenail, too. Sometimes people have a broken heart. Sometimes people have a broken relationship. Sometimes people have many broken things, and that's what the negativity is. That's what pornography is. It's a broken receptivity to a harmonious way of enjoying life. Now, why do we persist in wanting to have a duality in our life? Why do we want to persist in having good and unhappiness in our life? We do that because we are still reaching for that apple in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We want to go to movies that are exciting, movies that will take us away from the mundane activity of our everyday life. Take us away from the experiences that tell us that we're limited, the experiences that tell us that we have to always keep our mind one-pointed on whatever we want to go. And we think, no, I can keep my mind two-pointed. I can do tapping out words on my SMS on my cellular telephone while I'm driving my car. And I can make telephone calls and I can do these things. Well, what is it that the statistics are telling us? They're telling us that by doing this dualism, by doing this dualistic activity while we're driving, it creates problems, it creates accidents, it creates an unhappiness within us. Now, let some music be in the background. Perhaps even just the music in your heart. And as you hear this music, you feel calm. You feel peaceful. You don't feel sleepy. You feel calm and peaceful while you're doing whatever task you're doing. Now, they've done research on students, and they've found that certain types of music help them to achieve a higher level of competence in a given course. And they do this training, do this research with students to see whether the music of one composer or another is more significant in helping them have better grades. Well, now, if these students go in there and they think that this music is going to help them have better grades, then it's going to help them have better grades. And if they go in there and they think that this other music is not going to help them have better grades, it's not going to help them have better grades. And yet, a lot of students who listen to rock and roll, who listen to hard metal music, and do their studies, do very exceptionally well. And you say to yourself, well, how can that be? How can that be? That's almost a denial of the very principles that we believe in, that we're teaching. No. It's what does the student believe the music is going to do for him? What does the student believe? You know, in our minds, we have so many aspects of our ability to think and our ability to be aware. And these many aspects draw upon our attention at all times. And so we might be sitting having a conversation with someone, and all the time our mind is thinking about the fishing trip that we're going on, or we're thinking about the girl that we're interested in taking on a date, or we're interested in the lessons that we're doing at school, or we're interested in a dozen, maybe a thousand different possibilities. Now, does that keep us from being a really interested, active person with the other project we might be doing, like driving our car or having a conversation? Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no. Sometimes the music takes over an area of our consciousness that has been keeping us from giving our attention to an area that we'd like to give it attention to. Now, Herb, you're saying in part by saying these things that dualism is good. You're saying that dualism is a benefit. Well, yes, dualism is a benefit sometimes to people who have weak consciousness. I can guarantee you that if any of us ever have 100% attention on anything at all, we will be utterly marvelous at it. If we give 100% attention, one-pointed attention, to learning to play the piano, we will reveal the ability to play the piano within us so rapidly and so beautifully and so significantly that it'll just blow our minds. The same goes with anything else. We have a statement. I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer. I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. It's a lovely statement, and it's true. The divine in us, God in us, each of us knows the answer to everything because it's omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. It is allness. And the more one-pointed we are in the idea that I know that I know that I know, the more we realize how we do know all these things. Indeed, the Bible is the story of the religious development of people. What great noble souls were able to transcribe the Bible from their consciousness and put it down on paper? Were they the great leaders? Were they the great religious pundits? Were they the great thinkers of their time? And the answer, quite likely, is yes. And did they have some modus operandi? Did they have some way of thinking about it that was significantly their own? Oh, yes. Did they run in conflict with some of the people in their community? Oh, yes. But the people in the community could not override what they were teaching, saying, doing, writing, or being, because they were more dominant than anyone else. They believed in what they were doing. They were so one-pointed, they were so dramatically one-pointed, that they were able to do the thing they wanted to do. Now, as foolish as it sounds, when Alice in Wonderland was being written, it was being written as a lovely story, but it had a dualistic purpose, talking about the politics of the time. It had a dualistic purpose and telling how thoughtless and how utterly unimportant many things are in our life, and yet we give great importance to them. And what are we doing? We're being dualistic. We're listening to the two things. Now, if you, as a child, hear the story and you think of how silly some of it is and how fun some of it is, and you don't judge it as to its rightness and wrongness, you just listen to it, and you think, well, now, isn't that great? Then, to you, it is a very meaningful, very great, and very wonderful, and a very significant thing. But if you're an adult and you're looking at it from its political ramifications and how it speaks about and against the politics of their time, then you think, well, that's dualistic, that's not correct, that's not right. And yet, it is very right, because it's one man's opinion of what's going on in his world and how he equates it to other things. So often we give illustrations, people love illustrations, to help put a point across. Now, if you take a hammer and you hit your hand and it hurts, and you say, oh, that hurts, and you take a hammer and you hit your hand and it hurts, and you say, oh, that hurts, and you keep doing that, and you have not benefited from saying, oh, that hurts, and knowing that you're taking a hammer and hitting your hand, then you say to yourself, I am not going to hit my hand anymore. And so you put the hammer away, and you don't hit your hand, and your hand, you say, my hand feels so much better. It's so much better since that hammer went away. Well, then out comes a stone, and you pick up that stone and start pounding it on your hand. And you say, oh, that hurts. And then you put away the stone, and you say, oh, it's so much better since that stone is put away. Well, no, the truth is, it's so much better because you stopped hurting yourself. You stopped wanting to hurt your hand. You stopped wanting to hit yourself. Well, that's obvious. No, it isn't. It's not obvious. Because how many times has a carpenter hit his thumb while he's putting a nail in? Only when he thinks he can't hit straight with the hammer, that he can't do it properly. A good carpenter takes his hand on the bottom of the hammer, and he lets the hammer head and its arc do the point of putting the nail squarely into wherever he wants to put it. And he can, with one or two taps of that hammer, drive that nail straight to where he wants it to be. You and I, or others, would say, oh, well, that takes practice, that takes skill, that takes genius. There's a little YouTube about a carpenter from Germany, and he was being very silly. He had two hammers, and these hammers were very sharp-ended on one point, and they were able to pull out nails or so, but sharp points and pointing straight out like an axe. And the other was a hammerhead. And he took these hammers, and he use them to pound nails in. And so, what did he do? He took the hammer and he put the nails in a board at the ceiling. And he threw the hammer to the ceiling so that the head of the hammer would hit the nail and drive it in. Well, one, two, three, and he drove them in, and he did not destroy the wood around the edge of the nail, because he just drove it right straight in and to the point that he wanted to. And then when he was all done, he took the hammers and he spun them so that they went to the ceiling and they impelled themselves into the ceiling. And they were driven into the ceiling itself. Now, that's a trick. But he did this while he was doing all sorts of silly things and doing it so that he showed you that it's not a matter that he had to have perfect aim, perfect this and perfect that. He just saw the hammer going to where he wanted it to go, and it went there. Now, he was trying to do other things while he was doing that to show that it took not very much attention to do that, but did a little bit. And as he did it, he was quite charming. Quite amazing. We all have this ability to do anything. We can drive the hammer straight to the board with the nail and put it in wherever we want it. The nail can be crooked going into the board, but the hammer can hit it straight into its crookedness and its slanted position, or its straight position, or whatever position it wants. Now, this is all mental agility. A tennis player, he sees where the ball is going to go, and he puts the ball there, and the racket is held in any of the unbelievable number of positions to put it there. A golfer, when he watches the ball, and he sees the ball, and he looks at the ball, and he tries to put it somewhere, and the ball doesn't go there. The ball takes him all sorts of places, to the rough, to the fairway, and sometimes to the green. But when the golfer, who is a master at golf, he takes the golf ball, he tees off with it, or he hits it at any point along the way, and he sees where he wants it to go. He sees it go directly where he wants it to go. It might go right through the crotch of a tree. It might go directly through a marsh. It might go directly through a sand trap. But it's going to go directly where he wants it to go, even with the impediments that come upon the ball on the pathway. This is how you and I are. We are magical people. We do have the knowledge of what the apple means in Genesis. The apple means that when we are telling ourselves, let it alone, we take all of our attention from it, no longer having desire on it, and we move in a more positive direction. Now, the symbol apple is a symbol of food. The symbol of apple is a symbol of good. You think of a beautiful red apple. You think of a beautiful yellow apple or green apple, whatever kind pleases you. And that's the kind you have. Now, in itself, it's merely a symbol. But the symbol is so grand and so wonderful that we can take the hammer and pound that nail in the ceiling without going up there on a ladder. Amazing, isn't it? We can do many of these things if we train ourselves to be great in it. Many people train themselves to be mediocre, and then they wonder why some people are great. Well, some people are great because they are one-pointed. They let the dualism out of their life, they let the dualism out of their experience, and they remain one-pointed, and they are very, very successful. You and I, we have this possibility of being very successful. We have the possibility of leaving the apple alone and putting our attention on what it is we want to do. We want to put the ball in the green in the hole. We want to take the tennis racket and put the ball where we want to put it. We want to do anything that we do, put the nail in the ceiling, and then take our hammer and throw it at the nail, pounding the nail in. But it's not throwing it at the nail, it's throwing it to the nail, the head of the hammer to the nail, so that it pounds it in. You can be sure this young man practiced quite diligently on this for a period of time, but he had to have the idea it could be done first. And in seeing it done, then the doing it merely followed that he believed in himself and he did it. You and I can believe in ourselves and do anything that we want to do. All we can do to accomplish that is just say to ourselves, I know that I know that I know the divine in me is the answer. And you will be able to do anything that you want to do. Kind of exciting, isn't it? Bible stories have a lot of value to them if you just let go of the obvious and look into the cultural, social, psychological, philosophical background, which tells us a great, wonderful story. Have a great day, and know that I love you. I love you. I love you.